Welcome to Ageless by Rescue. This podcast is devoted to exploring the science of rejuvenation, uncovering the most trusted experts, the must-have products, innovations, and technology in the field of vitality, aesthetics, new beauty, and cosmetic enhancement. I'm Baha Etmanen, the founder and editor of Ageless by Rescue. Ageless by Rescue gives you unprecedented access to international and Australian experts and visionaries.
Hi, it's Miranda Kerr here on Ageless by Rescue podcast.
Hi, this is Martha Kay and you are on Ageless by Rescue podcast.
I'm Trini Woodall. I mean, I feel I'm being interviewed by the sexiest woman in the world.
Welcome to a very special launch of Season 8. With the highly anticipated panel session on inclusivity. The birth of this episode was at the ABIC conference in February 2024, where I was asked to join this panel of aesthetic and beauty industry trailblazers to discuss diversity and representation in our industry. The live panel was simply transformative, and I have to say it brought the audience to tears. I decided to bottle the secret sauce of that live event and I invited the same guests to the show. Joining me today are three remarkable individuals whose dedication to inclusivity has shaped the beauty industry in profound ways. James Vivian, a skincare luminary whose journey from a career in music to dermal therapies has been nothing short of inspiring. James's Melbourne-based clinic, James Vivian, is renowned for its holistic approach, intertwining skincare with mind, body, and environment. His recent venture, Viviology, is set to revolutionize the skincare market with its confusion-free line of cosmeceuticals, paving the way for more inclusive beauty industry. Peter Friend is the co-founder of Will and Peter Skin Clinic, and whose 40-year career is a testament to resilience and empowerment. As a proud trans woman, Peter's founding of Trans Sydney Pride in 2015 has provided a vital support network for trans and gender-diverse individuals. At the peak of her career, at 62, Peter's journey embodies the importance of self-advocacy and community support in navigating the beauty industry. I'm also delighted to introduce you to Agnes Doob, a registered cosmetic nurse of African descent whose dedication to inclusivity and education is unparalleled. Through her work at Zebra Aesthetics in Maryborough, Queensland, Agnes is breaking barriers and championing diversity in an industry often marred by a lack of representation. We first met at the Fresh Clinic conference last year in Byron Bay, and Agnes was a beautiful, warm, radiant face in the crowd of my live podcast. And I'm just so delighted to have her on my show today. We all hope this conversation and the insights address diversity and advocating for inclusive language, practices, and services. We believe this episode is invaluable and transferable to all industries. This is so wonderful. I get to have this incredible panel on my podcast. As I said in the introduction, we kind of got together under James's stewardship at the ABIC conference, and the conversation that we had about inclusivity just felt like a homecoming. Everyone in the room had a visceral reaction to what we heard from the panelists that you'll hear from today, and it felt like a natural thing to do to bottle that secret sauce on the podcast. So I'm so honored to have you guys join me on the Ageless by Rescue podcast and to continue this discussion on inclusivity that James started. So I've given a little bio on everyone, but I'm going to jump to asking James a couple of questions, and then I'm going to hand over to James to host this episode because he just did the most magical job at the ABIC conference. And I think that we want to kind of keep that flow. Let's start with your background. I mean, you moved from music to being a dermal therapist. And I'm wondering if you could tell me how your own personal journey has impacted the way that you approach your business and looking after clients.
Oh, how long you got, Baha? But to summarize, when I was asked to speak at the ABIC conference and to be joined on stage by Agnes, Peter, and yourself. You know, I've never felt like the poster boy for inclusivity, and being a privileged white male, I was very aware that I was being tasked with something very, very important, but nonetheless something that is very important to me. And I think for a lot of us, we just do things very innately. So for me, I thought, how am I going to tackle such an important topic, or why is this topic important to me? And it really comes back to my upbringing and my time at school where I was bullied and I never truly felt like I fit in. And that was because I was more effeminate and of my sexuality that people seemed to know about before I knew about it. So it was like I couldn't be myself. It was like I couldn't walk into a classroom without someone calling me out for being a little bit different. And that weighs on you, you know, year after year. But of course, when I finally came out, it was the most liberating moment for me ever. And the next person that wanted to call me something, well, they were just really stating the obvious. So the reason I shared that story was because I think everyone in the room, whether or not they had had a similar experience, knows someone that has had an experience like that. Maybe they have a child that's gone through that, or a friend that's gone through that, or they might have a client that's going through that. So I believe that I come at inclusivity from an empathetic perspective. And I found a wonderful quote online, which is that inclusivity is the water that, empathy is the water that inclusivity swims in. And I also spoke about how probably everyone in the room is empathetic. It's why we do what we do. It's why we're in this customer service centric industry where we care for people all day, every day. We want them to feel amazing outside and in. And I know this will resonate with you, Agnes. Like, we also want people to like us, because probably for a lot of us, we've been in these situations where we haven't felt liked and loved and supported and cared for. So it's really important to us that we create an environment that has that in spades.
One of the things that I found really fascinating about our panel discussion is how involved the audience got when we were at the conference. It felt like we touched a nerve into everyone who was there, and it was full house. There were people crying. There were people asking questions, sharing experiences that were just so vulnerable. And speaking of vulnerability, I think you all touched on this in a certain way, is that when you have someone on your bed, they are vulnerable. Right. And so as a consumer, when we go to have a clinical experience or a facial or even a consultation, it is often the most vulnerable exchange that we have. And it's not uncommon for our dermal therapist, our treating physician, our nurse to become our friend and to know more about us than most people will ever know about us. So in that context, I think it's really interesting. Exactly what you were saying is that empathy and your own personal ability to translate what you experience and overlaying it without presuming. One of the things that I loved that each of you said is that you were not presumptuous and you had created a protocol in your practices that allowed for some ambiguity and curiosity. And I'm wondering if you could speak to that, James, because that was the thing that I loved so much. You gave some really practical tools to the clinicians in the room, but I'm wondering if you could kind of speak to us, you know, for someone who's going into see their clinic, how they can advocate for their own more inclusive, more safe, more welcoming treatment when they're going in to have a procedure or a treatment done.
Well, I mean, I'd like to think that it's actually flipped, that the clinic or the clinician or the practitioner is actually creating a very inclusive space that speaks to the customer, because we're all so unique, not just from the position of the therapist, but from the position of the client. And we all want something very, very different. And I'm sure Peter and Agnes will agree, like the longer we do this, the more we learn that it's not always about the treatment. It's so important, of course, but the people come to us for sometimes not the treatment at all. They come for the care. They come for the chats. They come for the security. And so everyone is going to want to promote inclusivity differently. Everyone is going to have a unique set of clients with a unique set of concerns. But I think coming at so some tips are to just remain as agnostic as possible. And that shouldn't just be a philosophy that is strictly related to business. It is something that can extend to our lives at large, because we're not just having interactions with people in a treatment room. We're having interactions with people all day, every day. We're going to the post office. We're going to the dry cleaner. We're bumping into people on the street. And of course, we're welcoming people all the time. So my philosophy around inclusivity is extends to everywhere I go.
But I think beauty is a really interesting one because, you know, we know from being in the industry what a powerful force feeling beautiful, being beautiful, feeling healthy, feeling included in that conversation is. And that's why our industry is booming, because it's something that people pursue with quite an amount of vigor. You definitely flipped the switch in my brain about inclusivity outside of the beauty industry. And what you're saying is absolutely right. It's, you know, it's seeing inclusivity and seeing the broad beauty in everyone all the time, not just when you're having a treatment or not when you're having conversations about appearances or how you feel. Can you share some of those things that you flipped in your practice? Because they were just extraordinary. And I thought to myself, I would love to be a patient.
You make a good point, and that is that people do really rely on our industry to be looked after, and that we are having a moment, and that the industry is booming. But we also have the potential to make people not just feel great, but to feel like crap too. So it's knowing that we can do that and listening to our clients' experiences elsewhere that also really drive our inclusivity practices as well. Hearing things that have happened and going, oh my God, I'm so sorry that happened to you, and making sure that we would never do that as well. So I think when it comes to inclusivity, it has to start at home. It starts with the people that you employ. It starts with the treatments that you offer. It starts with the skincare and what skin types and skin concerns and what ages it can address. Of course, how you place furniture and the interiors you have that allow people to move safely and comfortably out and in. And it's also really important that you, and finally, it's the way that you promote your business, right? With every word you say, word you type, and images you post, the power of social media is phenomenal. And you can welcome or offend someone before you even meet them through your social media. But some of those more specific tips that we use is around gender. And that's very dear to me because I'm a male in a female dominated industry. And one of the things that I didn't mention in the presentation, but something that I think is still really important to note, is that this industry is a very important industry to women. I think that the cosmetic industry or the beauty industry really started off as a bit of a special place for women to come together. It's an industry that champions women from an employment perspective, and that is still something that I love about this industry. But it is an industry that is still not female specific. So I think whether it's employees, staff, or clients, it's really important that we let everyone feel that they're welcome to lie on the bed too. And in today's age, where someone might not necessarily present as the gender that you expect them to be, it's really important that you refer to them by name, or you keep the gender very agnostic, or ask on our consultation form. We will ask for a gender, but also a preferred pronoun, so that we can always ensure that we are referring to that client as they prefer.
I just love some of your questions when you were doing the booking, like, who lives in your household? So there were just these beautiful, warm, open-ended questions that allowed you to connect with your guest or your patient or your client in a very warm and human way. And I love the humanity of that. which I think sometimes is missing in clinical practice. Peter and Agnes can talk to that afterwards, but there is a slightly more, you know, in clinical approach, we can lose some of that warmth and humanity. And you seem to have like really dialed it up, which I love.
Well, thank you. When it comes to inclusivity, there's so many different areas where people can feel excluded based on their race, their gender, their sexuality, their ability, their color, their culture, their religion. So you can go big or you can start off small, and you can really hone in on who's coming through your doors already. But from a consumer's perspective, it's not just about who's resonating with you from an inclusivity perspective. You know, people are looking at social media to find a clinic or a therapist that resonates with them for so many different reasons. So if that is top of mind, make sure that you're talking to someone that is really proud of their inclusivity practices. Like, we're proud of it. It is on our website. It's on our social media. It's on our email signature. It is on our shop front.
It's your DNA. It's like, it's part of your DNA.
It really is. And so for us, you know, our key motto is we don't want anyone to walk into or walk out of JB and think, I don't belong there. But that is a big call, because it's not just the inclusivity story. It's, are we also addressing their concerns? Do we have the right treatments and home care to suit all budgets? That is a really big way that our industry can sometimes be very exclusionary. But we try to have different options for different people. But at JV, you do get what you pay for. But we also know that that doesn't suit everyone. So it's important that we can also speak to our clients about other options at other clinics or in other parts of, that we can talk to our clients about other clinics around Melbourne that might be better off suited to them. So you're not closing the door on someone to make them feel like, okay, well, maybe there's nothing for me in this industry. No, there's lots for you in this industry. And we like to also be, through our consultation process, a little bit of a guiding light through the industry, because we understand that it takes a village. It's not just our way or the highway that is going to get a client all the results that they could ever want. We are often just one part of the skincare journey, and we love working with people like Peter and Agnes to really create a 360-degree approach to skin management that is touching on more than just the skin, of course.
Well, as you can see, James is eminently qualified to take over this discussion with the panelists. And Agnes, James and I were just over the weekend before we recorded this episode at the dermatology conference over in Melbourne. And it was a wonderful experience for me to see all the technology that was coming through and all of the sessions that were addressing many inclusive practices, many inclusive treatments, really aware of skin tone, age, disability, even financial ability was very much a topic of discussion at that. So I feel like slowly, inclusivity is being infused into the aesthetic and the beauty industry, whether we like it or not. But I'm going to hand it over to James to deep dive into this conversation with Peter and Agnes.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And Bahar, it was great to have you jump on stage with us at very, very last minute to complete our panel circle. It really was, it was a career defining moment for me from the perspective of it. I think sometimes we just go into autopilot. We do what we do. We love what we do. But sometimes we forget the impact that we are having on people. And for me, that was a real moment to be like, no, we're doing something really special here. Actually, it makes me a bit emotional. So I
think we were all emotional. I think we can all agree. Like, it was unreal.
Yeah. I'll never forget it. And we have a very special bond here today. And to Baby as well, it was amazing for them to put aside that time, because I've never been to a conference where it's been discussed before. Not in this industry at all. So I think they're also part of this discussion as well, or responsible for. So, Peter, we'll start off with you, and I want to mention your journey as a proud trans woman, and at the peak of your career at 61, is both extremely inspiring, and you are a beacon of hope. Can you share with us how you navigate the beauty industry and what your experience tells us about the importance of self-advocacy and community support for trans and gender diverse individuals in finding their place and peak in their careers?
Well, you know, for me, my personal journey began as a beauty therapist in 1983 when I signed on to beauty school. I was, in 1983, the only boy in beauty school amongst a room full of women. At that stage in my life, while I didn't really have the words to communicate my gender identity or what I was feeling inside, it was very scrambled. But what I did know, what I thought I knew, was that I was a gay guy. So I landed in the beauty school as a gay man. And for the first, I was 21, up until the age of 38, I pretty much worked as a male beauty therapist in this industry. And I'm actually quite proud of that. I was struggling with gender identity all that time. But I realized at a very early age who I wanted to be. I just didn't think it would make my life better in becoming a woman. I did not think I would be accepted in this industry. And this is a real fear for a lot of trans and gender diverse people. How do we remain employed? How do we keep the balance of our life? How do we keep the normality in our life? And for me, the thought of losing that sense of normality, being able to come to work and do the job that I love, the thought of doing that probably made me, delay the inevitable of becoming the woman I am today for a long time. It wasn't until I had my own business, which is Bull and Peter Skin Clinic here in Wadawa Junction in Sydney, that I had the financial and independence, and I didn't have to answer to anyone. I could be who I wanted to be. It was a journey I was determined to complete by the age of 40, and I'm really pleased to say I did. And now at the age of actually 62, having worked in this industry, and continued working in this industry, I do feel like top of my game. And since the panel, I thought, why do I say that? Why do I actually feel like I'm at the top of the game? And I feel like you talk about customers coming in feeling that comfort. It's actually about me feeling comfortable with who I am. So, yes, my gender is aligned now with who I see myself as. But the real work comes when you start loving yourself. In order for me to love myself, I had to go back and embrace my male experience, combine it with my transition experience, combine it with my female experience, and it comes back to me, loving myself. So when my clients walk in the door, I think that's what they feel, because love is an energy that I'm able to take and give to them. Now, so far as being trans in this industry, and it's about bringing your whole self to work, and I think when you're able to do that, whether you're a gay, lesbian, gender diverse, non-binary, when you're able to do that and bring that to work and know that you're not just accepted within your work environment, but also accepted by the customers, we need to feel comfortable. I need, personally, to feel comfortable with my customers. And quite often that's on me. How do I make them feel comfortable with me? I don't hide who I am. I've never really hidden who I am as a trans woman. It's something I'm very proud of. Quite often when my customers come here, they already know. Oh, you should go and see Peter. He's this amazing trans woman who does his great facials, etc. I don't mind people saying that. But if they don't know when they come here, they soon find out. Because I'm quite open about it in my conversation. Best judicially, lads, do you have children? And I say no. So it usually goes from there. Yes, James?
Well, we learned, as Baha, you said before, another option of the do you have children, which can often, I think, just sometimes put people in an uncomfortable situation if they've had trouble conceiving, is to say who lives at home with you. And then you can learn all sorts of things from either your therapist or your client. Peter, because you have felt that you've never truly had to hide yourself, do you think that that is a reflection of our industry, and that is something that should be celebrated? Or do you think that you would have felt that confidence in any industry that you would have worked in?
I think it's a reflection of our industry. And I think because our industry is led by men, I think that our women is led by women who want to make other people happy. I think the uniting force that we bring to our work, whether we're injectors, whether we're dental therapists, beauticians, whatever, we want to make people happy. We want to make people feel good. And it's not just about what we're doing in the clinic. It's about how we make them feel.
I think that that's a really key thing, Peter, and I would absolutely agree with it. Like, you know, look at our panel here. Agnes is a nurse. You have dedicated your entire life, Peter, to creating a safe space, a warm space, a place where people feel held, beautified, nourished. Same with James. Or you meet the doctors in this space, same, same. They're not, they're not performing surgeries to, do something functional necessarily. They're doing things to make people feel good. And you want each of you in this industry to have a bedside manner that is truly warm and human. So you're right. It's an industry that hopefully a good, 80% of the people who are participating in it were drawn to it because of their desire to love and care and nourish and nurture people.
Yeah. One thing I've over the years is that we're all going through some sort of transition. I just didn't have the luxury of dealing with my unclosed doors. Every single client that comes through my door here, they're transitioning into something. They're transitioning maybe into married life, being a bit older, being motherhood, children leaving home, empty nest syndrome. They're all transitioning into that next phase in life. And once they start talking about that and I start sharing about my experience a little bit and that, it's this interconnect. As human beings, this ability to transform and learn and grow and everything, and the intersection that we all share, be as male, female, or gender diverse, is quite incredible. That's my way of connecting with people.
I agree. And Peter, you and I shared that moment in time where we were the only boys in beauty school, and I do know a lot of men that have been in that situation too, but unfortunately have not made it out the other end like we have. You know, they have experienced a lot of diversity and a lot, so they have experienced a lot of pushback, and they've left the industry feeling very, very unwelcomed. And I think that is absolutely a comment on the industry and an area that we need to improve. But I also think that it is a comment on individual strength. Just like you talked about, Peter, like by hook or by crook, we were going to make it through this industry, and we were going to find a little niche and a safe place for ourselves where we could also create a safe space for other people as well.
I mean, for me, it was there to do
You're
this.
Fine.
There was nothing else I knew how to do. And the options open to those girls in those days was either like be a sex worker or be a showgirl. And I couldn't do high kicks, so I guess beauty therapy was for me.
I would have picked showgirl. I've always wanted to be a showgirl. I just don't dance very
well. Well, I did.
It's never too late at
all. Never too old. It's never too late.
Now, for you, Agnes, it wasn't a lack of male representation that you found confronting when you entered the industry. It was a realization and confrontation about the lack of representation in the industry of people of color. So can you share with us the outcome of a conversation that you had with your manager when this first appeared to you and how you continued to advocate for more inclusivity since then?
I'll start with, like, when I first came to this country, like, you know, you would walk into buying makeup in a place, whether it's a makeup store or something, and they didn't even have color tones that suited my tone. And I'm talking 18, 19 years ago. And by the time I got in the industry, you would walk to a spa, beauty salon, anywhere, the only people you would see advertised for treatments were Caucasians. So I remember working for a chain clinic and talking to the franchisee saying, have you noticed that there's no people of color to advertise? Like, how are people going to come in and want to have treatment if they don't know that they can get treatment because the only person you see is a white person? But obviously being chain clinics as well, you know, it starts at the top. So there's only so much she could do to advertise her business, and she couldn't do anything unless it came from the chain. I mean, I worked there for a few years and I'm grateful for them, but at the end of the day, when I started to go out on my own, the first thing I thought of was, I want to represent people of color. I want people of color to actually know that they too can get treatment and get the support that they need for their skin without feeling like people don't understand them. And it's still a process because people still don't understand how to treat a person of color. Majority of the time, you know, you walk in and they tell you, oh, you look fine, you're beautiful, you don't need anything. But we do.
There was such a great amount of content. Did you think, Agnes, I'm curious about your perspective, at the dermatology conference, the ASDC that we just attended on the weekend, about treating and, you know, the industry terminology is or Fitzpatrick's.
Oh, yeah.
And it just seemed like such a breath of fresh air to me that there was that conversation. Like every single laser presentation, their big moment to shine was the fact that you could treat all skin tones.
Exactly. I think it was really good. I actually felt proud listening to them and talking about how I can actually go in and get laser treatment. I mean, I know we still have issues with, you know, of course, inflammatory hyperpigmentation and stuff, but at the end of the day, at least I can get treatment. At least someone of color can get treatment. And there was even a dermatologist who was talking about how some of our skin conditions are actually mistaken for something else, which is true, because when I walk in and I say, I've got this rash, the first thing I get is, oh, your skin is perfect, though. And I'm going, oh, but something is wrong with me. And then you get misdiagnosed because people don't understand their skin tone. They don't understand your skin color. So it becomes like a whole whirlwind of trying to get the right diagnosis for you. And I was glad that they actually brought that up because they are looking into people of color getting treatments now. And they are acknowledging people of color getting treatments.
And Australia is full of people of color, of all different colors. Like, really,
people are of color. Like when you think about it, they are dark skinned, and we are a multinational country with so many people, immigrants coming in, you know, wanting treatment.
There's a few really wonderful that brands are feeling the confidence to promote a device or a particular protocol for all skin types, but it's really important that it's not just said, that it is actually appropriate and that it is safe, okay? Because it's one thing to say it's inclusive, but it really needs to truly be, because there's a lot of variables that need to be considered when it comes to treating darker skin tones. And you can't just be like, I can treat them and I've got the machinery. You actually have to have the machinery and have the experience and be doing all the right steps pre and post treatment to ensure a safe and happy outcome, right? Really, because as we know, with inclusivity, it's one thing to say it, but it's another thing to truly mean it.
Yeah.
Agnes, something that resonated with me was that when you were at the chain clinic and you were frustrated, you also had a level of understanding. And that is something that I think that it needs to be stated, because anyone that is champion inclusivity is not under the impression that things haven't been like that for a reason. We just want to move forward, right? We want to acknowledge the injustice that's being done and we want to do something about it. But we understand that often things take time. That was something for me when I was at beauty school and I was referred to constantly as a female, or every time I open, or not every time, but often when I open an email and it starts off with hi ladies, rather than being really, really frustrated, I just think, well, how can I do something that is going to maybe people consider how they communicate with us in a more inclusive manner?
And, you know, I just want to jump in. There's an actual medical imperative for inclusivity. There is a medical imperative. For example, Peter, you may have transitioned to becoming a woman, but there are still certain protocols that need to be accounted for. Like maybe you've removed all the hair off your face, but maybe you haven't. You're part of your transition, right? So yeah. That's something that you need to be aware of, inclusive, well versed in when you're treating someone who's transgender. Am I correct?
Yes, and it's tricky because I do feel like we are all walking on eggshells at the moment. As a trans person, we do know when people have the best of intentions. Now, so far as gender diversity and where people are traveling, some people like me are traveling to the binary female. Some people are going from female to the binary version of male. Others tend to play around with the gender and sit somewhere in the middle. But all of them are valid genders. We may not, and I certainly don't.
I'm talking about the physical act and the physicality of it, in that if you, what James was saying, if you want, you can't just say you're inclusive. You have to be prepared before, during and after. You have to be appropriately trained. You have to have not just an empathetic heart and mind, but also a medical and scientific approach to how you're going to treat your patient if gender equality or skin color is, or even age appropriate treatment is really important,
because
there is something you wouldn't do on a 12-year-old girl, no matter how much you wanted it.
Yeah, and for some trans people, there are real consequences to taking hormones. For example, as a beauty therapist, I need to have an understanding of, for example, when someone is going from female to male and they're taking testosterone, testosterone is a very powerful drug that can drop more oil activity, and we know what that leads to. Acne, congestion.
That's exactly what I meant, the medicalization of it.
And for people like me, like do hair removal, you know, to get rid of hair from our face, from our body as well. So often a skin therapy clinic or a laser clinic is one of the first ports of call in order to affirm our gender. And we haven't always been welcome. We haven't always been in situations where we feel the therapist has an understanding of our specific needs. And that makes it uncomfortable for me as a client, but also it makes it uncomfortable for the therapist. So it's all about training. Diversity training starts from the top, from the management and the owners of the clinic, and it has to filter down to every level of the within that business.
I just wanted to say, like, coming back to what, like, James saying, it's one thing being inclusive, but, like, you know, practicing that inclusivity, because sometimes when a patient comes in, I speak from my experience as a person of color, small things like asking people questions like, where are you from? I recently met a beautiful lady at ABIC, and she was born and raised in Australia, but she's of African descent. Now, if you ask me where I'm from, I'm going to tell you I'm from Mirabar. You know what I mean? Because you didn't ask me what my cultural background is or where my roots are from. You're saying where you're from. I'm an Aussie. I've got the certificate to show for it. So small things that when we're thinking about being inclusive is, just because a person is different, it doesn't mean that they're not from around here. They should feel welcome and comfortable coming into your clinic, knowing that you're not going to judge them because of the person that they are. It's the small things that we ask. It's the way you ask the question that makes a difference.
I would just like to ask you, Agnes, if I could, talking on the subject of colour and going back to the idea of the importance of understanding the science and the medical impact of correctly being inclusive.
Yeah.
So I would say 5 years ago, if we take Peter's laser hair removal example as the leaping point for this, is if you went in to get your hair lasered, if you had any real pigment in your body, they would either burn you or say, at the time that you're making the appointment, look, we don't have a laser that can treat your Fitzpatrick skin color.
Yeah.
Fine. But, you know, for other things such as injectables, and I know you're a KOL for a number of companies, as far as now all the treatments that are coming through, anything that makes any incision into the skin, if you are of different backgrounds of ethnicities, you literally have to consider scarring, pigmentation, you know, how prone that skin is to pigmentation. James, you know, when you made your skincare brand, I'm sure you had to consider the broadness, the breadth of the Australian population, because different skin types require different skin care.
Yeah.
And we have different thickness of skin, we have different pigment of skin, we have different wound healing abilities. So the conversation, aside from being an emotional conversation and an ethical conversation, it actually is a medical conversation.
Yeah. So I'm a nurse trainer for a couple of companies, and one of the things I bring in, even when I'm educating and training people, is being considerate of a person's color, skin tone, and skin color, because it does make a difference. The quality of the skin is different. The texture of the skin is different. You know, response to the treatments is different. The results are different. So facial structures, so as an injector, our facial structures are different. So bringing all that into consideration, there's a reason, like, you know, going back to the whole, it used to be you walk into a clinic, it was only Caucasian person being advertised for treatment. Most Africans being injectables are for white people, because we see them like,
of course, thank you. Yeah. I can see that. And also, you don't want to go, and there was a big talk at NSS last year, if you remember, James, about being careful not to over-feminize a face or over-masculinize. Or being respectful of the culture of that person. I had Dr. Elsa on the show earlier this year about cultural sensitivity when you're doing injectables. Like, you have to really respect that. You don't want to turn everyone into like a little upturned nose, high cheekbones. If that's not the correct anatomical structure for their ethnicity, you're actually erasing their cultural birthright if you're injecting incorrectly.
And I find, because personally, that's how I've looked at it. The reason why we're now having some women of color bleaching their skin and going and having injectables so that they have the nose that looks like the Caucasian nose when they're African, you know, trying to get the cheekbones that are different and
everything. Well, the V shape that's very popular in Asian cultures, exactly. You know, that's not their face.
That's not their face, because that there hasn't been that talk and that advertising of every color is different and every person should be treated the addressing the way that they look and not trying to change them and treat everyone as a cookie cutter. Like, it's not all just cookie cutter. And I think in the medical, they're starting to shift in the medical side of things. I know, like, you know, we have a lot of Asian KOLs that are talking about how to treat an Asian patient. And you've got the Caucasian ones talking about how to treat a Caucasian patient and the Indian patient, different patients. But I found in Australia it's lacking as to how to treat an African patient. And, you know, celebrating their facial features without changing them to give them the features that they don't already have.
And that's the tricky one. It's not so much relevant to the work we do as a dermal clinician, but it's about, as you said, Agnes, celebrating what makes them beautiful based on their cultural heritage. But nonetheless, we still have people coming through asking us for things. So it's about treading that line between giving them what they've come to ask us for, or giving them our advice that should be very agnostic and should be very, very understanding of a wide breadth of different face shapes, cultures, heritages, but at the same time really being able to deliver them something that is aesthetically pleasing, so that they're not being like, that person didn't listen to me, you know.
When you're treating skin and someone comes through and you can see as they walk through the door that their diet, which is heavy in palm oil, which is heavy in refined sugar, which is heavy in saturated fat, is the problem, is the reason for their cystic acne, is a contributing factor to their dullness, you have to tread lightly, right? You have to have a cultural sensitivity that can ask all those questions, offer a treatment protocol, but not make them feel ashamed, self-conscious about what else is going on in their life that they may not be ready or able to change in a hurry. You know, if you're seeing a teen come through the door and they are eating the food that mum or dad puts on the table and that food is contributing to their cystic acne, that's an inclusivity conversation to be had, right? Am I correct?
Yeah.
No, without a doubt. It's so very, very different from saying sticking a bit of filler in a face to change the shape. It becomes much more of a holistic story, right? And the other thing too is that people's true cultural heritage does not always express in their skin tone.
Mm.
So it's not always about who's in front of you, how do they look. It's about delving deeper into exactly those sorts of conversations, Baha, so that you can actually ascertain exactly where their maternal and paternal heritage is from. And Agnes, you know, the perfect statement before saying to someone, where are you from, is just so passe, right? Like, anyone that's listening to it, please never, ever say that ever again, because you just can't assume. Just ask people more about themselves and it will be revealed,
yeah.
Such as, have you spent any time in a particular country that they might have mentioned that they're connected to? Then you can learn. Let people expose themselves in their time, not yours, because it's kind of got nothing to do with you. Baha, you mentioned before when we were creating Viviology and being mindful of being inclusive. And this is a really good example of where skincare is not just about the skin that it's being applied on. It is a full experience. People buy skincare not just to pop on their skin. People buy skincare for a self-care moment, for people buy skincare to connect with a brand that they believe in and feel comfortable to support. For us with Viviology, we made products for the skin. But we made sure that whomever was stumbling upon it was like, oh, I could use this if I wanted to, or I could give this to my partner, regardless of gender, or I could give this to my mum or my dad, or I could give this to anyone. And they would ideally have a positive experience with it before it even kissed the skin. Because that's the nice side effect, I think, sometimes with skincare. It's that it's working, but we're the ones, or people are the people that have to apply it to their skin. So we started there.
It's such an important conversation to have, because we had this, we touched on this in the panel, beauty is tribal. We're all just trying to belong to something. Yeah. I was having a conversation with someone who went to the Taylor Swift concert. It wasn't going to take long before I took her to Taylor Swift concert. No. Here it is. But the religious experience, that incredible sense of togetherness that made her show so intoxicating, so potent, so powerful, was that for 3.5 hours, we all sang the same songs, spoke the same language. We all wore the same clothes. We were all from the same tribe. We were all ageless, genderless, borderless, colorless. We were just all one thing. And there was a real human need for that. You can see that a human being longs for that belonging. And so the inclusivity conversation is in response to that desperate need for belonging that we all have at every age, at every stage. And so, you know, by having those conversations, and I spoke to Peter on Saturday night before we recorded, and, you know, we were talking about advocacy and, you know, at what point can you be an advocate? Can you be an ally? How comfortable are you being an ally? And, you know, having this panel discussion 2 weeks before gave me the opportunity for the first time in my life to ally up so hard for a transgender girl that I met who was in a kind of sticky situation. But I was so relieved that I had some language around it because of you guys. So it was, it was a great experience. But I'm wondering if, Peter, you could talk to being an ally for inclusivity for transgender people as a start, and then we can talk about it in other context.
Yeah, just before Agnes, you need to go.
I've got 3 minutes.
You've got to go.
3 minutes.
Okay.
So why don't we throw a last question? I'll throw a last question to Agnes, and then we'll
talk to Peter. Sorry,
Agnes. I'm wondering if, with regards to the discussion around colour, you could also offer some insight into people of the broad spectrum of colour. Not just African skin tones, because we don't have someone representing other skin tones. Yeah. So it would be great if you could speak to it and what you see as, you know, a good way for a consumer, for a person to approach this when they are having treatment.
Can you explain that, what you mean by that?
Well, we need to ask, do we need to, at the time of booking, say, you know, I am from this ethnicity. I tend to have keloid scar. I'm prone to keloid scarring. Mm. I need to let you know that only. So, for example, I don't let anyone who is an experienced with thick Middle Eastern hair blow dry my hair.
Yeah.
It just isn't going to work. I have been getting a blow dry twice a week since I was 18. I'm 50 now. Yeah. So I've pretty much know who can and can't do my hair. Oh. And so I advocate for myself, and I also make sure that the person who's doing my hair doesn't hate me at the end of it.
Okay.
The same goes with skin. There are some things that I have to say.
So personally, when I'm going to have treatments, or when I, if I'm a consumer, doesn't matter, you know, what I'm having done, even if I'm talking on the phone or sending a message, I actually tell them from the beginning, I'm of African descent. When I used to have my hair, I used to say I've got curly hair if I'm having my hair done. And I would ask, have you ever treated someone of my culture or background, so that I know that a person I'm going to understand how to treat me? And I think as a consumer, if you're a consumer listening, it doesn't hurt to ask. Because, like, you will get someone who will go, yes, I actually know how to treat a patient like you or a person like you. Come on in. And if they don't know, then maybe they will refer you to an appropriate person that will be able to help you as a consumer. Because I find it doesn't hurt to actually ask, because then if you go in and you get treatments done, you, like you were talking about laser treatments and how people have gone in and got burnt because someone thought, yeah, they know how to treat it, you know, expatriate 5 or 6, and then they walk out with burns. And if they actually said, oh, I'm of this background, you know, do you know how to treat this person? Then maybe those people can say yes or no. But also as a business, maybe the businesses should also educate their people so that they know how to treat. Not to just say, you've got a yang in the room, a yang laser, we know how to do a fit 5 and 6, or just do it. Do your people know how to do the treatments or not? I think it goes both ways, but as a consumer, I would say ask if they know how to treat you, if they have dealt with someone of your background.
Great. Yeah, I think it's worthwhile, particularly for a medical procedure. I think it's really worthwhile.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I know in my business, I ask if people have things. We always ask, do you get keloid scarring? Do you get, you know, like some treatments that we ask if people will scar, or if they've got other medical backgrounds that we're not aware of. But then if I don't know how, if they say yes, I get keloid, I have my doctors that I script and, you know, call and say, hey, they get keloids. Do you reckon the treatment we're doing today would affect them or not? But then if we don't ask that, then we're not going to know. But if you're not asked as a consumer and you go, oh, hang on, I actually have this condition or I have this thing that happens, definitely say, speak out so that you actually are not disappointed in the end.
Perfect. Thank you.
It's a good example, and just like you do, Baha, is that we also have to advocate for ourselves.
Yeah.
Right. And I've been in the situation, and I know of so many people that have been in that situation that have said, I wish I had have said something.
Yeah.
So it's just like at any point in our lives, if we're not feeling comfortable, we're not feeling comfortable for a reason. Yeah. So listen to that and do something about it.
Yeah.
Because we can't always trust that other people are doing the right things, even though they are doing, even though they're saying they're going to do the right things. So follow your gut. Always, particularly when it comes to skin,
yeah,
because shit can go wrong.
Well, the thing is, for being trans or gender diverse, we do need our allies. Now, I talk about this quite often when I do public speaking. People think they're an ally when they put a rainbow flag on the window of their business or on their website. It actually needs to go a lot deeper than that. Maybe it's a first step, but the conversation needs to evolve around what being an ally really is. And being an ally is an action. You know, I know that, Bahari, you had an opportunity recently to be an ally. You stepped up, you showed your kindness, and you made that person feel valued and you made them feel seen. And I think that's really important. And, you know, talking about the Taylor Swift concert and feeling part of a community, the thing is, for trans people, we've never really felt like we belong anywhere. You know, you go through your whole life and you never feel like you belong. And then quite often you land in the trans community and you try and find your feet there. I know it took me a long time to feel like I belonged within the trans community and to find other people who were similar to me in values and experience. And a lot of trans and gender diverse people are really looking for that. So within our salons, if we are educated up and we are allied up enough, we can be that person for them. We can make them feel like they belong. We can make them feel valued and seen. And for me...
And how would we do that? How can we... What is some language around that? What are some actions around that?
So I think within skin clinics, I think it comes down to education. You know, I'm sitting here listening to this conversation, and I think education needs to start within the beauty therapy schools. It needs to start within the nursing colleges before the, you know, like people like me probably need to go around.
And the beauty counters, if we're talking about, you know, Sephora, Mecca, Maya, David Jones, you know, when whoever's serving us there too.
Yeah. We need to get people in there, you know, who are well-versed like myself, who come with the experience of the beauty industry and the lived experience of being trans and get in there and educate. Because, you know, we are a country that is made up of different cultures and religions and, you know, and diversity. And that is what makes Australia so beautiful. And, you know, being inclusive and diverse for one person is a different thing for another person. So, you know, I think we just need to educate people, not just young people, but people of my age as well, who is obvious sometimes their ideals are more stuck. They're more stuck in their way of thinking. They're more rigid. You know, young people these days have the internet. My generation never had that. So young people these days are able to go online and they're on TikTok and Instagram and they're seeing and they're learning from people who are on those platforms. And I think that my generation also need to step up and be learned and find out what trans is. Don't wait until you meet a trans person and fire them the 20 questions. Oh, yeah, I've always wanted to ask a trans person this, because that dog personally is not to educate. It is for me because I step up and I do these sorts of things. So I don't mind. But in my day-to-day life, that's not really my responsibility. So I think is within the industry, get learned. Do your cultural diversity training. Go online, do the work. This is, I must mention this amazing site that myself and other community members worked on called Trans Hub. If you're ever looking for any information, go online to Trans Hub. It is not just the trans people, it is for our friends, allies and family members to go on and get connected and learn about language. And it also lists a lot of businesses that are inclusive and welcoming of trans and gender diverse people.
That's so useful and actually wonderful, because it is, you know, when you're stepping on eggshells, it's easier to avoid the path altogether. And we don't want to do that. We want inclusivity means walking the path, even if you squash a few eggs along the way, right?
Yeah, because
you get better at,
you know, advocacy. Not perfect. Allyship is not perfect. You're going to mess up every now and then.
Absolutely. I'm sitting here trying to think about some, you know, practical ways that you can really, as you said, like go beyond sticking a rainbow flag on the window. It's got to start with an intention of wanting to be inclusive, and then it goes from there, because everyone's going to do it very, very differently. Everyone has their own experience or experiences or wants to impact positive change on people across a wide variety of different skin types and tones and people. So it's really got to come from that genuine desire, like anything we do in life. But it's a really important one that people need to start prioritizing, because it's one that I think people have neglected for far, far, far too long and just put people in a box, and people are not do not come into the world in a box.
I always think that
we leave the world in a box, but we're not in a box. We're very, very colourful, and we all need very, very individual approaches in an industry that is all about being looked after.
One of the things I just wanted to add to what you touched on was, you know, the more that we request inclusivity, the more we're likely to get it. And the more we avoid inclusivity and the difficulty around the conversations or putting up our hand to be seen or recognized for who we are, the later it's going to be inclusivity, inclusivity practices come into line. When I first emigrated to Australia, it was 1981. I emigrated to Perth, which is a very Australian city, and it's about as far away as you can get from Iran, who that was going through an Islamic revolution and a war. So I landed on the shores of Perth in March 1981, and my dad had emigrated before us, and my mother, my brother, and I met him in Perth. So we were immigrants, we weren't refugees, and we arrived with visas and a warm welcome. And I remember the day that we landed, my dad picked us up from the airport, took my brother and I to a sports store, and he bought us each a pair of shorts and a T-shirt. So remember that I'd come from the Islamic Republic of Iran, where at 7 and a half, I was taken out of my normal co-ed school and put into a full burqa, and I had to pray 5 times a day, and I had lost all nuances of being a young girl, a little girl. And so my dad bought Johnny and I the exact same shorts and T-shirts, and he bought us each a bike. This is day one of landing in Australia. And he took us to Cottesloe Beach, and he said, "You're Australian now, ride your bikes." And I remember looking up the sky and seeing the colour of the sky, the light of Perth, and the beach and the wide tracks, you know, that we were riding on. And there was just this incredible feeling of freedom. And I felt, oh, my God, like, look at this. But it didn't actually take long before I was slapped in the face with this sense of, you're a foreigner here. You don't belong. You don't look the same. You don't sound the same. Your hair, your nose, what you pack in your lunchbox isn't the same. So, you know, I had that very human thing of feeling, oh, just by putting on the shorts and T-shirts and having the bike, I belong. But life has a very cruel way of separating you from what you want to join. And I remember that feeling, and I carry that feeling with me all the time. So as you were saying right at the beginning of this conversation, James, empathy is a really big thing. So for me, that trigger of empathy. So when I see someone being excluded from a conversation because of their lack of cultural knowledge, it really makes me crazy, and I always step in because it takes a long time to integrate culturally. And that's the same whether it's a gender culture, you know, a social class culture, whatever it is. Every culture has its own rules, and it takes a while to learn them and to feel welcome and to be part of it. And I was, you know, I've said this to James before, I wasn't normally welcomed into the aesthetics industry at all. It took me a long time to find my seat at the table and to be respected and welcomed. And because I didn't know the culture, and there were lots of people who were scared of letting someone from outside of the, you know, the gang in. So, you know, from a point of advocacy, because I had that experience, I'm able to advocate. But because there are other things I haven't experienced, I have to learn how to be an ally.
Mm. And you know, thank you so much for sharing your story, Bahar. And it just goes to show the impact that other people can have on you, right? And it's often unwelcomed and wasn't asked for, and it's got nothing to do with anyone else, but people come in and they have these negative impacts on our lives and people that we know's lives. So all the more reason to be on the absolute other side of it and do everything you can to ensure that every way you're communicating with anyone that you know in your life, be it a client, a friend, a parent, someone you haven't met yet, that it is a really positive experience. And it is tricky too, because there is not a lot of education on this, but what there are now is conversations starting. So tuning into these conversations, as I said when I did my presentation, that I'm no expert, and I'd love to hear from anyone about how I can do better, because I still have a long way to go too. So we all have a long way to go as a community and as a human race as well. So if we are continuing to have these conversations, bringing more people into the conversation, hearing more people's stories, it's only going to highlight better ways that we can
do all of this. When I started an online social support network called Trans Pride Australia, which is an Australia-wide network. We advocate for inclusion and diversity within the wider community, but also we offer a safe space for trans and gender diverse people to socialise both online and in person. But when I started that group in 2018, I had no idea about trans experience beyond the realm of my own lived experience. And I had to learn really quickly, because suddenly I was heading up this organization and I had no idea of the conversation around non-binary or gender diversity. Like, I'd never even met a trans man. So how did I learn? I sat down and I had the opportunity to listen to these people. I went online and I did the work. And if I made a mistake, I apologized and I picked myself up and I made sure I didn't do it again. But, you know, I'm still learning, because I think my community is changing so rapidly. You know, there's so many.
And you're talking about learning about your own community. Like, you're still even curious about your own community. I'm talking about the mental leap of learning about a community you don't even belong to. But I love that you're saying we should be permanently curious about not only the broader community, but our own community. It helps to, you know.
And if I'm not curious, then I'm getting old, and I'm determined never to get old. Old is fine, but never old. And I'm still learning. You know, I was watching the Mardi Gras parade on Saturday night, and I was looking at all the different groups and people expressing themselves. So if you're looking at their joy and happiness, and so many different community organisations that were inclusive of trans and gender diverse people, you never even used to see that in the Mardi Gras parade. And you see it and you see the joy on their face, because, you know, these people who have been othered their whole life actually have this sense of belonging now. And it's a truly beautiful thing to watch, but I'm still learning. And as I learn more about these people, I learn more about myself. And that's where we all have the opportunity as well to grow as individuals.
Learning from the people around you, and in this context, clients, is a really powerful way to get informed too. And so one of the things I'd shared with was a survey to clients about how they feel that we're doing from an inclusivity perspective, or just how they're enjoying engaging with us or visits, and how we can do anything to make them feel more comfortable when they do engage or when they do visit. So that's a really easy way for anyone listening to actually get some real-time feedback from the people that you're already looking after. And what was so great was, after we were all on our panel together, a lot of people were tagging me as they made videos with question boxes talking about how, whilst inclusivity is already part of their business fabric, how can we be doing better? It's that it's our, one of our big philosophies at work is always room for improvement, and that extends to every single thing we do. It's not just the skin; it's about every client interaction. It extends to inclusivity. It extends to our environment. It's everything. So that's one that I think we can all take away, because at the end of the day, we're only here to look after people and to make their lives better.
Yeah, well, thank you guys so much for being on the panel. I feel like this is just the tip of the iceberg, and wouldn't it be nice to kind of revisit this topic, you know, periodically, and see how far the needle has moved on our side and also in our interactions. Agnes had to jump off the recording a little bit earlier, but Peter, I want to thank you so much for being on my show. It was truly an honour, and I really, you don't know how much I've learned from you, but I've learned a lot from you, and it's really been a pleasure to meet you. And James, every time I meet you and I interact with you, I just love you more. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you are such a layered, humble, talented
human being, and you are adding so much, so much to the professionalism, fun, expansion of the aesthetic beauty industry. And I can't wait to see you shine once more on the Non-Surgical Symposium Scientific Committee, which you are a part of, convened by Dr. Naveen Samaya. But yeah, I'm always learning, and this was just such an honor to host this panel. Thank you all so much for being on it.
Awesome. Thanks for having us, Baha. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please share and rate this episode. I'd love that. I'm Baha Etmanan, your host and founder of Ageless by Rescue. For more exclusive content, show transcript, behind-the-scenes video, real people reviews, and extended interviews with experts, I invite you to please follow us at Ageless by Rescue on Instagram, Facebook, and Rescue TV on YouTube. You can also sign up to receive our e-magazine and newsletters, all for free.